Good morning. This is hilarious.
Good
this.
Morning. Yeah, it is.
All right, you gotta do
so
the
funny.
And you gotta...
Yep. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Horsemanship Remarks Show. I'm co-hosting with Emma this morning because she caught a bad bug while she was in Santa Cruz, and now she has no voice, hasn't all week. It's really sad. So I'm going to do my best to fill in for her.
You'll do great.
While she can't talk.
We have lots to talk about. Yeah. So
yes,
here's the story.
We do.
I got one up on Emma because
yeah.
A, I have a voice right now. And B, we were doing the show last week, same time, different place. We were all in Santa Cruz, same room. Emma got knocked out that day by this bug. Sorry. I've got She's not happy about it. I'm not happy about it either, because here's the deal. So she got knocked out. Buck probably gave it to us gave it to her because he had it like a week ago or whatever. Didn't lose his voice like Emma did, but so I was in there too. We were doing the show together, and I felt a little tickle in my throat like the next day, but I fought it off because I am so glad I am not as sick as Emma is right now. Well, I think it's mostly just no voice at this point, right, Emma? Yeah. So anyway, you can't talk, so I had to tell the story. You couldn't stop me. But it meant we couldn't really hang out that much because I was not about to get whatever you had because it sounded terrible. So it was too bad. But
that was. I couldn't even give you a hug, Emma. I was so sad. I couldn't sit with you anything. But
so you did an amazing job with your colt out there. Tell us a little bit about your colt.
Thank you. Yeah, so he was a 3-year-old that I got to go down and start for a lady down there. So I just flew down for the week to start him. And he'd been halter broke when he was a yearling, but then he'd just kind of been turned out, and this lady had just got him this past winter. And he's pretty gentle and friendly. So that was nice. He's easy to handle and be around, and just a nice horse. But he was a good challenge for me because it was kind of a deception because he would really let down about things, but then there were little spots in him that would come up, mostly just in my groundwork, just circling up. He was just kind of sticky at first and not super flowy. And there were just little spots when I'd bring the flag up towards him where he would kind of get snorty and tight. I guess tight would be the best way to describe him like he was gentle, but and he wasn't troubled, but he was just sticky in the way he moved his feet for the first little while. Like the whole first day, I was just working to get him freed up. And it wasn't like there were any holes in him. He just, the way he moved, it was like just kind of sticky. So it was good for me because I'm not very good at getting them to stay out and around on a circle and stay ahead of me, stay united. So it was a really good challenge to try and keep him forward, and then by the end he got really nice about it. It was a really fun project.
It was the kind of an, it was like he was unclosed, not in the sense of being used to the flag, but just unfamiliar with everything you were doing. Like it just hadn't been introduced to him, like even in the colt starting process, forward and around wasn't there, flowing wasn't there. It was pretty minimal work, so it was kind of maybe a bit taken back by your expectations initially. Not that your expectations were unreasonably high or anything. He was just going, whoa, what are we doing? So
yeah. Adding all these movements that he never knew. He'd just been handled to do basic stuff with him, and then he was like, whoa, this is kind of getting complicated here.
And that's
so you had
Classical.
You ended up helping Maddie
so
with hers.
I flew out there kind of just to spectate and hang out with Emma. I did know you were going to be out there, Flora, so I wasn't surprised. I saw it on Instagram like a couple days before, but fun that you were there as well. Didn't know too many other folks, so I met a few people. It was good. But anyway, so you probably know a little bit more about the horse that I worked with. I stepped in and put the first ride on an 11-year-old Mustang that Flora's friend Maddie had been working with. What do you know about the Mustang? Tell us a little bit about Maddie. I didn't know her prior to the clinic and didn't get to know her real well there, but.
Yes. So Maddie is my friend from a ranch we worked at together. And she'd been there for quite a few years, kind of studying under them and learning from Buck. And she's been around this stuff for a while. And she had been in Santa Cruz at that colt starting quite a while ago when she was a lot younger. So she's kind of been in that circle down there in California. But we ended up both starting colts down there again together. And she got lined up with this Mustang through Bonnie, the clinic sponsor. And yeah, she's 11. She was a rescue from like a Marin Full rescue. Maddie, you're going to have to correct me maybe. But anyway, the owner got her to try and help her out. And then she's been kind of sitting and getting worked a little bit for the past year. I'm not sure how much longer the lady'd had her, but she's been just a little bit of work. And then the past month or two, Maddie's been going out to help the lady and work the horse, but really hadn't had that much time with her before the clinic and knew that she was going to be a struggle. Didn't really have very high expectations. I mean, Maddie wasn't even sure that she was going to get the thing saddled at first. She just wanted to make sure that she could handle it on the ground better. But it ended up, I mean, she ended up coming a really long ways with both of you guys. So that was cool. It was really, yeah, really neat to watch.
So that was pretty well the opposite of the little gelding that Flora was working with. It was far from kind of a relatively clean slate. Like I was saying, your horse, Flora, was kind of just like surprised by a lot of stuff, just the new expectations. Whereas I imagine the mare that that Maddie was working was pretty, had seen a lot, and a lot of it, you know, for all good intents, probably, and certainly in the case of the gal that's had her, or that owns her now, and called on Maddie to help her out. I'm sure there's been attempts made at moving her along because she had a lot of preconceived ideas. And just being a Mustang, you never know how skeptical they might be as a starting point. Some kind of come around and are gentle pretty quick. Some keep that edge for a lot longer. It's starting over days upon days, and then they kind of go feral when you leave them off for a while, at least some of them. So who knows kind of what her innate personality was underneath all of the exposure that didn't really get her through things or move her forward very much. She was the definition of an inside out horse. I mean, her back was hollow. She was bulging underneath her neck. There was more muscles underneath her neck than there was anywhere else. And it was almost like, you know, rather than her head hanging on the vertical or even kind of being in a neutral place, because her neck was so bowed inside out, it was almost like her head kind of traveled like that with her eyes up in the sky. At least when she had any pressure whatsoever. And Maddie was doing a fantastic job. I mean, got a lot of really nice stuff going, really had her, was getting through some of the flag stuff. She had had her working some blind spot stuff, throwing the rope while she was tied to the fence. Buck was giving her some ideas there on kind of the rhythm of throwing the rope up over her so it wasn't such a pause between times. That was something that kind of is going to be a lot of repeats, I can tell, on that horse. But Maddie was getting a good start on that. Had a pretty nice, you know, very nice hindquarter yield in terms of it. Her hind leg was connected to the rope. What she was struggling with was the coming forward and around, because, you know, even though there was a connection to hind leg, there was a lot of drifting of the shoulder. Anytime that flag got busy, she just would kind of be fading away just a little bit. And Maddie was doing some nice things to help redirect that, you know, kind of drawing her forward and around, drawing the front leg in. And yet her go-to still was that drift. So Maddie was doing a great job, had a lot of nice things going. When it came to saddling, the mare, same as anything else, was pretty sketched out, like she was about the flag, reaching up, touching her, and moving with a little more intensity, not understanding to move hindquarters independent of the front, having that drift. Everything was kind of scooty, sometimes quick, sometimes just a steady, consistent drift. But that made saddling a little difficult. I actually somehow missed what the saddling looked like the first time they saddled her. But I know they had, was it rough? You didn't see it either?
I didn't see it.
Maybe it was after class, because I'm not sure why I didn't see it. But I know they picked up a hind leg to get her saddled. She was tied to the fence, picked up a hind leg. I think she was tied to the fence. She maybe wasn't. Someone might have been. Yes. Is Maddie with us this morning, I assume? I don't know what the handle is here.
Yeah, be on here.
So Maddie, chime in on that. You can chime in on all of this. Maybe I'm describing something different than what you were feeling. I'd love to hear kind of how the colt felt to you. Or the colt, the 7-year-old mare. What were you going to say, Flora?
Oh, I said, well, Maddie's typing. I'm going to read what Emma typed in here. So she said, I loved how Maddie took the time to loosen her top line longitudinally, just persistently asking her to turn loose and lower her head, at least putting it on the menu.
And that was, I didn't have eyes on Maddie as much before I started working the horse. I did notice a lot of nice things happening, but wasn't as focused on specifically and consistently what she was doing in terms of the lowering the head and loosening the top line. I know once I picked up the horse, what I felt, and I could feel that she had done some really great work. Did she comment there?
Yeah.
Yeah, she said, yes, we had her tied to the fence, and Pierre had a hind foot for me. She was pretty touchy saddling the first time, but she tried to hold in there for me as best she could.
So they did get her saddled, I think, on day one in the afternoon.
And then,
I know why I missed it, because we had to run. Emma and I had to run, because Emma was not feeling well. So, bad news. Anyway, so that's why I missed that. But they got her saddled. Then day two, Buck asked me to step in mostly to get the first ride on her. I think Maddie was doing a great job in terms of moving her forward. I worked with her some, kind of focusing on that, addressing that drifting with the shoulder. I'm trying to think what else. Anyway, so then I put the first ride on her, and she was pretty tight about that. Buck said right off the bat, she's not going to buck, just go with her. She's going to be tight. She's going to scoot around. And that's about what it felt like. She'd kind of go and then stop. And then when she'd go, she'd be really tight. Relied quite a bit on Buck driving me that first ride. And we did some hindquarters, forequarters, but a lot of what she was offering was kind of a go and then kind of right back, but kind of get stuck coming right back and my driving her too much was not going to free her up. Buck driving her helped her get flowing forward more. I know, like I said, the hindquarters were there for me right away. The front end, though, Maddie had a pretty nice reach of the front end in a four-quarter yield, going pretty well on the ground from the saddle because she was kind of sticky. She was unable to get back initially when Buck was flagging us. That came together a little bit more. Let's see what Maddie's adding here as we go. Oh, Emma has a question.
Yeah.
And for a lot of the colts, hindquarters to a backwards finish is bad news. Yeah, there's a number of horses where they move the hindquarters behind the horse and kind of just wouldn't scramble back at the end of it, but would rock back and kind of just maybe not even lean into the rope, but it had that feeling of I'm coming back against something, even if the rope wasn't coming tight. And I didn't feel like that was the case as much with Maddie's horse. It was more the hindquarters went, but then we couldn't really sit back. It was kind of a surge forward. You saw it not sitting back as well. I don't know. She wasn't shifting back over her hindquarters in order to bring the front end through. It was kind of hindquarters and surge forward and then get stuck. I mean, it was kind of this lurching sort of feel. She got a little bit freed up. We walk trotted that first ride. So Emma said that was a good job of that being highlighted. Let's see what Maddie said too. By the last morning, I was able to saddle her out in the open without help. She was still touchy, but a lot calmer than the day before. Yeah. So I think, what was it, day three or something, I just kind of supported the horse while Maddie was saddling, and even then it went quite well. She had a little bit of a startle, but Maddie had done a nice job supporting her there. And then, yeah, the last day she was able to get it. Corey asked, what do you do to address the shoulder drift on the ground, if you don't mind explaining? So there's a few things that we were working on. Let's just say three kind of go-tos. The first would be Maddie had a nice hindquarters four-quarters, so just using that to say, and this is Buck's answer 9 times out of 10 if you ask him. If they're drifting at that shoulder, hindquarters, forequarters, go the other way and just kind of open up for them there an opportunity to go forward and come around you. A lot of times it's easy to move the hindquarters, send the front end through and send them right back out into that rope with the shoulder leaving. So it's kind of hindquarters, forequarters, and then release before they're going into the rope for an opportunity for them to come forward. That's kind of your main approach. One thing Buck doesn't talk about, because he doesn't want people backing up and pulling their horses over top of them. But he does it. It's definitely a part of the curriculum. If they are drifting, there's times where you might kind of sit back or draw back and draw the front end, not necessarily toward you, but kind of toward you to get that front end to stop drifting away and lead them around. And it's not reaching out here and pulling them around the circle as much as saying, come kind of in toward me. So that would be two. And then third, what ended up being kind of the go-to with, or the most effective in the end with Maddie's horse, was hindquarter yield and then just kind of allow forward rather than kind of not stepping in as much. Roll the hindquarters and then just let her come forward. Kind of hold the ground with that rope more so than you're not, we weren't drawing in and it wasn't, we weren't stepping into her as much, but just kind of holding the center of the circle, defining the outside of the rectangle, maybe even letting her kind of not lean on it, but feel it and make a decision to do otherwise. So there's kind of three things. Waiting on her, maybe driving a little bit, although Emma commented before she had to run that that she didn't really think we needed to drive as much as just wait on her, and that did work. Emma said, drift to forward three times before changing of direction. Yeah, and I was actually, yeah, and then saying, come in and around. So, actually, what horse was I working with that yesterday? I don't know. I've been doing more roll in the hindquarters and then send forward in between my hindquarters and forequarters, and that, I can't remember. Which horse it was helping, one of the warm bloods, I think. So that's the answer to that question as far as my, do you have anything to add to that, Flora, if they're drifting with the show?
I feel like that's a big thing that beginners do, but also I put that into all my horses, is not being able to get them forward and around on that circle, even when I'm just asking for a circle or hindquarters if they're drifting out with their front. So it's just, I think it's just practice and learning when to release, and but yeah, and also sending them back and forth between the fence kind of helps to straighten them out and then learn to roll their hind and break over without drifting way out away from you. But
Emma said, especially with a horse that tends to with a backwards feel. Yeah. Get them forward after that hindquarter yield rather than hindquarter yield, kind of head up and go back, which was her go-to. Yeah, it's an interesting, Flora, when you say, you know, that's something, it's easy to put in there, right? With all great intent. I was actually helping a gal yesterday. She's young and ambitious, and her colt is, she just dropped her colt off the other day. Her colt, she's done a pretty good job. He was a punk, and she brought him before he was gelded, and he was rearing and biting and kind of a disaster. Settled down a little bit when she gelded him, and she came to get some help, and has done a good job with him over the last year, developing some boundaries and whatever. But yesterday, all that to say, he's going pretty well, so I'm going to have her be involved in the start as much as possible. I think she's really going to step up and kind of enjoy being a part of it. Might not move along as quickly with her hopping in there, but I don't think it's going to hurt the colt's progress enough that it's not worth it. So that's what we're going to do. So I had her jump in on the second session. I worked him a little bit. There was a bit of the drift of the shoulder, but it was more the shoulder coming in. But I explained it slightly differently, which isn't that different. I explained it slightly different to her. I put my hands up on the side of the horse's nose, this side, and I said, because I think she was struggling to feel like, where is the horse supposed to be? Because I kept saying, put your arm up. Don't let him crowd you with the front end or with his head. He'd kind of go in there and go to nip at her. I'm like, that's a boundary. But then it was bump him when he goes to throw his nose to the outside and leave. And so I think she was feeling, she didn't say this, but I kind of saw on her face, she's going, where is he supposed to go? You know, I'm driving him out. I'm bumping so he's not out there. And I said, okay, imagine my hands are on either side of his head, not tight against him, but just a little cushion there on, this is the space where your, the front of the rectangle is supposed to be, your nose. And you're defining that he's not to leave that. If he runs into you, you're going to block. And that's the finding this side. If he leaves, your rope is going to say, no, come in here. And when he finds that, which is essentially the center of the rectangle, everything goes quiet. She goes, okay, that's good. That made a little sense to her. After that, she was a little bit more confident and assertive to say, not this, not that, because she felt more confident in where she wanted the horse to be. So it felt more fair to her. Why do I say all this? The next thing I said, because then the shoulder was kind of doing the same thing, and I started saying, okay, you got his head lined out now. He's not trying to bite you. He's not got himself counterbent and thinking about kicking you. Now we got to think about the same thing with the shoulders. So I'm like, got my shoulder under his neck, and I'm putting my hands either side of the shoulders and said, okay, here's the boundary on the shoulder. He can't come into you. You have to define that with the flag. And then there was just like a time or two where she got assertive enough with the flag that he started experimenting with that drifting of the shoulders. And I said, but watch this side, this hand over here, he can't push through that. So then we talked about the things that I just, when Corey asks, kind of went through some of those and said, here's how we define the outside of that rectangle, because you can't let that persist, not noticing it, or it can very easily become a pattern. So I don't know, defining the rectangle with my hands on either side really helped her see that there was a spot for the horse to be, because there was a lot of block this, block that, block this, block that, to where she felt like she was kind of just picking on him because she didn't know where exactly where the piece was, right? So and Emma said, yeah, the rectangle where it's at. Let's go back and catch a couple comments. Backways, Emma said, especially with a horse that tends to finish with the backwards feel. Yeah, the hindquarters, and then roll forward to Gary's corner. Right? Did you say more? But it's different for a horse that finishes with a lunging forward. Yeah. There it's a little bit more of hindquarters get back and now come through the other way, and let's reset and start that again. Yeah, so it kind of depends on the tendency of the horse. And with Maddie's horse, there was the backing feel almost as much moving the feet back. Sorry, I'm not letting you talk. We'll come back to your horse, Maddie. Almost as much as moving the feet back, there was that head up bulging neck that had a kind of up and away feel in the rolling the hindquarters. So, and then Lisa said, Emma, that's what I was picturing, Gary's corners. Yeah. Lisa said, yes, that's huge. Didn't catch the comment right away, so I'm not sure what was huge, something we were talking about. And when I was describing the sides of the rectangle, Emma said, yes, where is it? Where is the rectangle? I was pretty happy with defining that like that, just putting my hands up there and helping her visualize it. Worked pretty well. And then Maddie said, thank you so much for all your help during the clinic, Michael. I really appreciated it. Hearing your take on the mare and what you felt is very helpful as well. Cool. I'm glad I had the opportunity to step in and help you. You were doing a nice job, so it was good to just kind of collaborate on it. It's always fun. And then Emma said, but so critical to watch for the backwards feel. Emma's really harping on that one. It's critical, yes. And both are critical, because I could have taken my hands and gone like this, and if my arms are long enough, this in front of the nose and this behind the tail, you know, just kind of giving her a visual of the rectangle. If they're working their way backwards after that, they're going out the back of the rectangle without you saying it. And if they're kind of lunging forward out of that hindquarter yield, particularly when, like, this is what the mare was doing when Buck was flagging us. It was hindquarters and then kind of surge forward. You know, then you're defining, hey, you're running through this. So there's a place to be. It's interesting when you're trying to define the forward or not going forward so much, because you don't have two reins, you rely largely on repetition. just kind of reset and start again. You're not, I mean, thinking now I'm in the saddle, Buck's flagging me. There's not too much I could do to block the forward. Right? You're just going, all right, go the other way. Hindquarters, forequarters, go the other way. And we even saw that with Shooter. That was probably the coolest part of the clinic to me. Buck works Shooter for a good long while. And Emma has quite a bit on video of that for the Buck channel. And then he took a mare, got his hands on a mare from the Colt Start class, a red roan. You weren't there for that? Are you sure? Yeah, that was.
It was the afternoon of the first day.
Yeah, and that's when we had to run. No, you were there for the red roan. Anyway, that was incredible too. So anyway, we can come back to those pieces. But with Shooter, he was kind of surging with the working loose in the round corral. Buck had the rope flip over his hindquarters and he would just scoot out of there and did quite a few laps around the round corral, feeling that rope around his hindquarters. And yeah, I don't know how many circles did he do around the five?
50.
Not 50. Somewhere between 5 and 50, right? Which is a large window. He was going around for a good long while. 5 minutes.
Five minutes.
And that's without stopping, basically. He just kept loping. It was to the right. And he had a hard time finding him. Buck just basically just waited on him. He didn't do anything to try to get him to turn to the outside. You know, because that's eventually where he's going with it, flip the rope over, which, by the way, when you were working that on your colt, you were doing a fantastic job. Great feel. That looked really pretty. So anyway, Buck's horse Shooter was just misunderstanding for a good while there, and Buck just waited on him for longer than most people would probably think was, you know, they would think to try. You know, they'd be going, I need to help this horse. I need to do something. This is unreasonably long. And Buck obviously knew it was going to come through. And so he just waited it out. But there was a good while there. Once he got him changing eyes, it wasn't, I don't think, as much a blind spot issue. There was a little bit of that, but just a feel the need, just a lot of forward, kind of out the front of the rectangle. I don't know. It was blind spot involved. But anyway, it was hindquarters, and then he just kind of surged forward. Well, not having actual driving lines, which is where he took it in the end, he was driving with invisible lines. He couldn't block that forward. It was just the repeats, like it was on Maddie's mare when Buck was riding. I mean, you could take the rope and kind of corner him, which from the saddle you could do too, but it's getting in their way in a less than, I'll get to your comment, in a less than, you only have so much control to block the forward with, I mean, you're going through the hindquarters to block the forward. Emma doesn't look like she's entirely satisfied with my explanation. Okay, let's go back. Okay, so the forward and around from 9 o'clock to 9 o'clock or 3 o'clock. I'm going backward. Okay, let's skip that for a second. Okay, holding on what we were talking about. Yeah.
She said he didn't rob the horse of making the choice.
And didn't rob the horse of making the choice. And kind of what I was saying with Maddie's horse, it was the repetition that got him there. You know, I'm going to give you an opportunity again to make the choice. And if you want to go squirreling out of here and go lap or lope around for 5 minutes, which it certainly didn't take 5 minutes the next time. It took probably under a minute the second time through there. But then he had to check it out a few times. It would get really good, and then he'd decide to go again.
Emma said he could have stepped in front to block him. That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to watch him wait.
From the saddle, though, you can't step and set in front of him to block him. Like, that isn't really available.
Mm-mm.
Why are you looking at me like that, Emma? From the saddle, you can't step in front of them and block them. Is that look because, well, duh, that's obvious? Yes, that is obvious. Thank you. This is a lot harder when...
Yeah, when she can't talk.
So she commented on Instagram. People thought they would enjoy it more than they actually do. This is a lot harder. You can't ride a block. No, if you are riding, there's no way of blocking stepping in front of them. Like, basically fall into trouble where you get into blackberries is picking up two reins to define the front of the rectangle before you have the horse going, like Buck was doing with Shooter, regulating themselves, rating back to you, staying in the rectangle without holding them or blocking them. I don't know. To me, it just dawned on me as we were talking about it when I was having the scale block the inside, block the outside with the rope. Like, you could, there's pretty clear ways of blocking that and helping them find the center of the rectangle, whereas the forward, you kind of just have to keep setting up and letting them find it, set it up and let them find it through repeating, you know, hindquarters, forequarters, or roll the hindquarters and go forward and see if you can go forward now, which that was interesting. I'm sorry, Flora. I'm just talking. We'll give you a second.
The
floor
you're
here
good.
In just a second.
No,
what
good.
Was cool with the roan that he worked, and this, I mean, there's many examples of it. Anytime you've watched Buck work a horse that is kind of surgy, the red roan kind of has quite a bit of backing, but then when she did go forward, she would, you know, go out of there at a trot and kind of move tight and troubled, and Buck would corner her and say, yes, go, but not like that. We're not leaving tight. And so it was send and then corner, send and bend is a phrase he's used a bit or frequently. So it was then set it up again and let him find it, and just letting the repetition take care of it. So Emma said Buck complimented Flora on waiting for her horse to peek out before she tried to bend him. Yeah. And that was in when you're in the saddle, right? But I would say the same thing, you know, maybe after watching Buck for a while, like I said, you're moving her out in the round corral and getting him used to the rope over the hindquarters. You know, watching Buck maybe give you a little bit more confidence to just let it run its course. I think it looked fantastic. Yeah. You weren't forcing anything there or feeling the need to control, right?
That's interesting you say that, because I didn't feel that. I didn't feel like I had that exercise going at all. I felt like he was leaning on me, but I waited. I definitely did think to myself, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to pull any harder. This is just going to be a light feel, and I'm just going to wait for him to come through and let it be all his idea. And I mean, my horse was on a way smaller scale than Buck's, because he was just kind of walking around in there. But yeah, it's interesting. I think the thing I kind of got out of watching Buck and Shooter was he waited on the horse, and then by the end he got a way better result versus kind of making it happen quicker, maybe just because people were watching, not take up as much time. Say, here, I can help you find this a lot faster by doing it this way. Instead, he just said, I'm just going to let you work through this on your own. I don't really care if you get all sweaty right now and just, you know, run yourself tired for a minute. I'm just going to let you work through it, and then we'll slow it back down. And the end because it was all your idea, I think the horse soaked on it a lot better. And then maybe if he went back to do it, it would come back a lot faster than if he would have just stepped in and said, hey, yeah, let me kind of do this for you.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what we saw. Emma's comment is, it's not easy to decide if you need to be on time to bend, like, kind of help them out, like you're just saying, Flora, or like the example of the roan that he was working on the end of the lead rope, and when you need to wait for it to peak out, like with Shooter, or like the when you were in the riding, I'm not sure which ride it was, but it was maybe second ride, and your horse kind of squirted just a little bit, and you know, that's where Buck complimented you, good job letting it kind of go and then peek out, and feeling out when to let that happen, when it's going to peek out and come back, versus when you have to catch them right away because it might turn into them bucking or something, and saying, whoa, let me help you out. That's not an easy one to read. So let's define, Flora, can you define peek out for Val? She was asking, what is peek out?
Well, in my case, we were all kind of going around the round pen. There was a few of us in there moving our horses out, and I was asking mine to lope, and I was kind of slapping my saddle to kind of get him to move out, and he kind of surged and kind of sprung into the lope, and then was kind of getting a little bit tight, just humping up just a little bit, but it kind of, he just kind of jumped out of the trot into a lope, but then he kind of jumped into it and then just kind of came back down into a normal canter and then trotted, and then I brought his head around after he'd kind of slowed down. I could feel that he was just a little bit startled, and just a little bit unsure about that transition. So then I knew that I could see in the past how I would have immediately yanked a rein as soon as he went to jump up there. And it would have made the situation so much worse, because I've seen people do that where a horse spooks and then immediately they just grab a rein, and it makes it worse because the horse is leaning into that pressure and then the rider's scared. And so it just kind of spirals from there. So I could tell he's not a real forward horse. I knew he was going to come right back down and that he needed to kind of get up there. I knew I needed to correct it because he was a little bit tight. I wasn't just going to keep going, but by peeking out, he just kind of jumped up into it and then just kind of came back down. And that's when I brought his head around and said, hey, no, we don't
need to do that. Oh, it's cool to watch you doing that. And I'm sure some of why Buck was like, yeah, that nice job there, Flora, is because it is kind of a snap judgment. It's a hard, like, you have to make the decision, like, as it's happening. Not, you don't have time to go, is it this? What should I do here? You either go with it or you corner it. And your ability to read that and know, hey, this is an opportunity where it's better off for me to go with it, because like you said, you knew your horse enough to go, it's likely to peak out. He's not a real forward horse. He has, you know, in the course of my working with him for a couple of days, really come unglued with anything. You're a confident rider. You're comfortable, you know, riding a little bit of hump in their back, riding a little bit of a scoot, riding a little bit of, you know, minor trouble. All those calculations go into that split moment, snap judgment. And I mean, it's cool to see you ride with that confidence and know what to do. So
the confidence was helpful, because I didn't care really what he did. I knew that I was gonna do my best to stay with him, and I knew he was gonna come right back down. I think it'd be different if I could feel that it was gonna keep accelerating. Then maybe I would shut it down before it peaked, because I knew that it was going to build and I should probably get in there and help him before it gets worse. Like on some horses, maybe that just the act of them startling and jumping up there could scare them into doing more. But yeah, Emma said intuition and just kind of having quite a few do that to me. I remember asking Buck kind of about that. And his answer, it was a couple of years ago, asking him, what do you do if you go to transition to the canter and the horse kicks out or just doesn't roll up there smooth? And it's the first few rides. Do you bend them right away or do you kind of keep riding? Mm-hmm. And his answer was, it depends. It depends on the situation.
So Val just said, maybe more succinctly, peeking out is they go, there's a little bit of a surge there, but you let that surge peek out. You let them kind of come over the hump and then start to slow themselves before you roll them into a hindquarter yield, rather than, like Flora was saying, kind of snatching them in the midst of that when it's already going to kind of come through without building, like Flora was saying. So when, let's maybe chat for just a second on when you, what sort of situations, Flora, would you feel the need to kind of interrupt and corner a horse right there, where you wouldn't say, okay, here's a spot where I'm going to let it peek out?
I think for me, it would be in their attitude. Like if I go to roll up there and I can tell they're getting a little bit cranky about it, or they start to kick out, I would probably take a rein. I don't know, just to kind of correct that. With my horse, he was just a little bit concerned. And so I said, well, I'm just going to ride you through this and then comfort you. But I don't know. It just depends. But I feel like a lot of the time when they start to experiment with kicking out, it's better to kind of shut that down. A lot of times I find if I try and just push them through that, yes, I'm going to get through it by just going, you know, just repeating it until they go smooth. But sometimes I feel like it's better to shut them down and say, no, let's try that a new way so that they don't kind of get that patterned in their head. But what would you say would be a situation for you?
Watching their attitude with it, watching for a pattern to develop. I think even in that situation, I would say there's still kind of a feeling it out with the kicking, because they may, just like your colt maybe went but needed to be a little tight, some horses might need to object a little even as you ask for that transition. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of just I don't like your leg there, but you help them get there, and the repetition, they go, oh, okay, just get there. I don't have to be upset about this, because as soon as I go, you're going to release and, you know, we'll go back to being in the rectangle and peaceful. But if it's a pattern, or if there's a real strong resistance where they're kind of on the fight, interrupting that and going, no, you got to yield somewhere. And it's kind of like, you got to yield somewhere, and it's going to be the hindquarters if you're not going to go forward. Just get those hindquarters stepping over there. Emma's going like this, which means.
Okay. Emma said, would you guys say you're feeling for it for if the horse has decided or is still wondering?
Emma also said, I guess perhaps it matters on how well the feet, or how well /fast the rein connects to the inside hind leg. And I think that's on the decision whether or not to corner them when they're troubled. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes when they're going that fast, you're not going to be able to help them right away anyway, because there's all that energy's built and you know that you don't have it as reliable as you need it. So it's better to bring them through that and wait for them to slow down and then take it.
That's not a fun feeling where it's like, I know.
I know I don't have any control right now. Yeah.
What was great with Maddie's horse, she had the hindquarters enough that, and it was interesting riding that mare for the first time, how I would say probably 70% of the time, it went right to the hind leg. Like I could pick up and her hindquarters were there. But there were like sometimes I would reach for that rein and she would just bow her neck the other way and take all those under neck muscles and strain them against that rein. And I asked Buck, is this like, was I late once and then just gave her this idea? Because initially she was kind of just ready to bend. And he said, nope, she's just going to have to explore that. And you're just going to wait on her through that and not, not try to force it or not get to where you're kind of desperate. Right. I think that happens a lot when you're riding colts. You can get like, oh, this has to come through. But that would have certainly been a case. And that's also, Emma mentioned a bit ago, intuition or kind of that snap judgment. You kind of can read when they go, just like you're saying, I've got it right now or I don't. And you'd like to have it just be there every time and know that you've got it. But when you reach down that rein, you know whether they're going to reach for you and whether they aren't. And if they aren't, trying to reef that around while they're kind of squirting forward is not going to help the situation. You do kind of have to go with it, whether it's a peek out situation or they're kind of starting to hump up and get a little troubled. You really can only wait there. And I asked Buck that as well. Like, is there anything I can do at that point? Or are you kind of little bit at their mercy waiting on them? And you kind of are. And that's some of the danger of colt starting, really, is like if your preparation, Emma's got another comment. If your preparation is, is good but not stellar. I mean, not where Bucks is. There's still that risk, and even buck riding a horse, there's the risk that it doesn't come through when you get in the saddle. It's particularly if they get a little tight about you being in the saddle, that it's not going to be there as seamless as you want initially. So that'll keep folks from starting colts when they're prepared to do so. Hearing that.
Emma said the number one thing I noticed on day one, and it kept progressing. Maddie had for sure caused the horse to believe she was its friend. Friendship buys latitude.
I know on that note, Maddie, after the first time bridling, and like I said, I wasn't n noting what you were doing as much initially, but after the first time bridling, and probably before, because it wasn't too difficult to bridle, Buck asked me to step in and help there, but you did a fantastic job of getting that head down and getting all around her head and her ears to the point where initially there was this very defensive up and away, and by the end, I mean that mare was just head to the ground, all the tension in the under neck was gone, and she was just eating it up. She was loving how are you getting around her head. So yeah, definitely building that kind of horse giving you latitude because of the confidence she has that you're her friend. So let's catch a few of these earlier comments that Emma made. Don't know, maybe not. What would you guys say you're feeling
I can
for if
add
the horse has decided or is still wondering? Yeah, let's skip that comment. Yeah, I'm not sure what we were talking about right when she said that. Decided to resist or just doesn't know for sure if it might work out. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I'd answer there. The number one thing I noticed on day one, and it keeps progress kept prog oh yeah, you already read that. The Maddie had the mare friend. So what and again I might be asking to elaborate on when you know it's going to come through and when you know tell it's not going to come through. Whether they've decided to resist or just doesn't, they're not sure it'll work out. Yeah, it's a good one. I don't know if Emma could talk, we could have her input. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of hard at articulating it other than saying it's a feel thing, but I think it also maybe has to do with what you know about the horse, because in those first few rides, if I know that it's kind of a fresh start for the horse, I'm more apt to think that they're probably just a little bit unsure of things, and then I'll just kind of let them sort through it a little bit. Whereas if I'm maybe restarting a horse, or like Maddie's horse, I might be less apt to let them go through that, like a surging thing or whatever. I might shut it down to say, nope, I know that you're kind of in this habit, and I know that there's some resistance in there, so I'm gonna shut it down and help you get through it. Versus a fresh colt, if you've done your job right, there shouldn't be as much resistance. And if there is, you can kind of let it pass by and say, once you get through this, I know that it's going to disappear because you have
depending confidence. On the colt. Some freshes can be or just still. Yeah. One thing on that before we jump to Emma's next comment, I think it's reading the horse's mind. Which Emma's saying, well, duh. I think that's one of those things where it's hard. You can't read their mind, but you kind of can, right? Like you can, and you need to try to perceive what they're thinking, because that will or should influence your decision and what influence what you're going to do based on how they're thinking about. Have they decided to resist? It's kind of like moving the horse out and them kicking out. Are they actively resisting? I'm saying, I'm not going, and they're very determined to get you to shut up? Or are they just going, I don't like that you're asking? What is their mental, what are their thoughts in how they're doing it? Or picking up a rein, are they reefing their head away and kind of have this, I'm decidedly not going to let you pull on me? Or as you pick it up, are they just not sure? Like you said, Flora, like, I haven't experienced this yet. Fresh start or not, they're going, I'm not sure what to do with this snaffle. I feel that so reading, are they searching and trying, or are they actively going, in a kind of very determined way? And I don't know, it's just a feel thing. Like you said, Flora. Yeah, it's a cop-out answer, but it's the answer that you need to, the only answer at times. What were you gonna say?
Well, it's their expression too. Sometimes I feel like one will kick out or just be super choppy transitioning, but you can see their ears and their back, but they're just kind of concerned. And then there's other times where you can see, like, their neck's craned, their ears are pinned, and they're kicking out. Yeah, both times the horse is kicking out, but how you handle it might be different, and they're thinking something different in their heads.
Maddie, go ahead. Okay, Maddie.
No,
thank you. This mare had learned to overpower the human, and I knew there was no angle or strength I had that could make her think to her feet. But I tried my best to connect to her soul. And Emma said, and I would agree, great job. So obvious and clearly was a factor in the horse's decisions. Yeah. That was cool too, because you had a little bit more history and credibility with the horse. It's interesting, like, if I'm helping someone and I feel it would be helpful for them or the horse for me to step in, it kind of can go one of two ways. It's seldom neutral, because now this new energy has stepped in to the dynamic, and some horses go, whoa, you're new, and there's kind of this immediate interest, maybe where a horse was checked out and they're like, whoa, you're different. I'm going to pay attention just because you're coming in here with a little bit more presence than maybe the person had that had been handling him. In other cases, and this was the case with Maddie's mare, she was going, I'm pretty skeptical of you. I like Maddie. I know Maddie has my best interests at heart, and you, I'm not so sure yet. So, I mean, you could see very clearly that at work for Maddie. And sometimes you step in, and I experienced this plenty. I step in and you got to kind of assure the horse, no, I'm on your side too. I'm here to help, and kind of build as quickly as you can a little bit of credibility with them before you even really start asking too much of them. Maddie said once more, thank you. I definitely believe there is another factor to this horsemanship when it comes to the soul connection. That's the part I'm chasing. Good for you, because that is a huge factor. And really, I mean, that's kind of what we talk about frequently. That is the real deal. You're missing that, you're missing the whole thing. And I missed the whole thing for quite a while. I keep reading.
Emma said, super proud of you, Michael, for gently taking the teacup and not spilling a drop.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. It was pretty dang cool to see that, to see you step in and help the horse and help Maddie, because you were riding the horse and working the horse, and just how you two interacted, how you interacted with the horse, just that relationship between all three of you was so cool. I hadn't ever seen that in a clinic, and it was just really respectful. It was just, yeah, it was really neat to watch. And that horse made such a big change to me. I know that there's a long ways to go for her, but I was kind of blown away by how much progress she made, really.
Well, and in terms of the collaborative element there, well, let me say this first. Emma said, Maddie, you're into a girl, lovely to see, never let anyone shake you. I would say you didn't let anyone shake you, which is great, and don't in the future let anyone shake you and make you question that. But what was fun in this collaborative element is I was very much impressed with what Maddie was accomplishing and how she was going about it, and both physically what was being accomplished and mentally, emotionally what was being accomplished between her and that mare, that it was like, I'm going to step in and support in a couple of areas. And then I was like very quick to go, now it's yours, Maddie, you keep going. Like, I'm going to let you continue to work your magic. I didn't want to take the horse from her, or take the experience from, their experience together away from them. So, and it's not always the case that I would be so like hurried to do that. It's okay, for me to make progress here, I can't keep giving the horse back to the owner. And there was never that question with Maddie. So, Maddie said, I think it was really great for the mare to have two people in her life that were different and she could trust. Emma said, that's a great point, Maddie. Evidence for her about humans in general. Yeah. Cool. Flora, what did you see when Buck was working that red roan mare? Talk about it, you don't have to go very long. We're gonna go long, all right? We're gonna work this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't like tell you one big thing, but I love it whenever he grabs a horse. I mean, that was awesome. And after watching him, when I went back to my horse, I just thought to myself, okay, there's a lot of things I need to have going here that are different. But I think the biggest thing was just watching him teach the horse to follow a feel, because the horse had no concept of feeling anything from the human. It was just kind of standing there like a robot, and just kind of didn't know who was moving who. And at first, it just stood there with a dull look on its face. Its expression was just kind of somewhere else. And as Buck worked it, it started to kind of tune into him. And then at the same time, like, her neck kind of dropped. She started kind of rolling her jaw in the circle a little bit and, you know, flowing forward. Because at first, when he went to move her, it was a big shock. And she'd startle and trot off, and then he'd bend her. And I think I learned a little bit more about how to send them and bend them, and not let them get too far to the out of the rectangle to the other side of the rope, because he'd just kind of send her and then say, okay, but stay back, stay bent and stay on my circle. And then it was just cool to watch him do that and keep shaping it up and basically teach the horse to get united, because she had none of that. That was what I was lacking. And so it was a perfect example for me to see him work her through that. And then by the end, she was just all focused on him and just ready. And so her expression changed, and that might have been my favorite part of the clinic, yeah. Honestly, was watching him do that.
Well,
what about you? Okay. On time, yeah. But not early with the block.
There's another, like, not late, not early, because that's what I was just going to say, not late or not ineffective, which is unfortunate that it's so easy to be ineffective for even as much as one might try. Missing it is so much easier than getting it, because that moment of getting it and being effective is a pretty narrow window. But it reminded me, as I was watching, thinking back to, I can't remember which horse it was that he started in Sheridan. We were in the indoor arena. He was over near the mirrors and the tack room wall. And he was just got started with, don't be worried about the flag. And there was so much, the horse would just leave troubled and he'd corner him. And he wasn't even sending him. It was just the initial don't just run off forward or to the outside with this flag. And right off the bat, both in that case where it was just get okay with the flag, and with this mare where it's go but don't leave troubled, it was get to the hind leg in such a way that, and this is, I think, the not late, not early thing, in such a way that you block not only the forward, but also the drift of the shoulder to the outside. If you're ineffective right away there, you can be trying to block the shoulder and in fact making it worse by not quite getting to the hindquarters. And that, I mean, I wish it wasn't so difficult to nail that, because it is so critical and it's so easy. Your most core essential element, it's so easy to take it in the wrong direction. Not to be discouraging for folks, I mean, it's just the reality for all of us. It's so easy to inadvertently do the opposite of what you're trying to do right there. So it's always great to watch Buck nail it and see what that looks like. Emma said, mm-hmm. It's better to be a tiny bit late, don't you think? Trying to think what too early looks like. Left. She's giving me the look. They haven't left yet.
She's
really, yeah.
Like if you're just sending them and then they're immediately hitting a wall where you're flagging them and then you're like, yeah. No, flag, no. You're giving them a little more room and you're just saying, my rectangle's going to be a little bit bigger right now, yeah. Just to let you find it. Because otherwise, you're going to get a little bit lost saying, I'm just hitting all these walls and I still don't know where to go. And I'm getting all elevated and worked up here. And my expression isn't getting better. The way Buck did it, the horse's expression just kept getting better and better. Because, and then his rectangle got smaller and smaller. But
no,
yeah, go ahead, Michael. I kind of cut you off.
Very good example. Emma's like, right on. Yeah. Yeah, because that can actually start sending them backward too. It's like, I'm trying to move the hindquarter, which is a forward move, but saying, not running off forward, don't leave tight. And then you're blocking too early. And then the horse goes, well, the only door that seems to be open is going backward, which is the absolute opposite of what you're trying to accomplish there. You're not saying go backward when you're saying don't leave tight. You're saying go forward, but not tight. Tight, not in that manner, not running off with the shoulder or just hurrying off forward, oftentimes forward flaring to the outside. Lisa said, I would think that too early would be blocking the forward, exactly, which you don't want to do. Right. Emma said, my comment to Buck later was how the hindquarter yield, one rein stop, is like the deep underground river from which all our wells are drawing. Oh, man, there's one of her analogies. Yeah. I'll have to hear more on that once you start. It's a very deep subject. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll have to hear more on that when you can actually talk, Emma. There was one gal in the, I think it was actually the horsemanship class, where Buck said, if you, I'm going to say this to you because I think you might actually do it. If you do 50 one rein stops on each side for 10 days, you will not believe what your horse feels like. And then he said, and that might be your whole ride. You go, I can't do anything. Well, yeah, that is your whole ride, and that's fine. And I think there is, you know, Buck's not doing 50 one rein stops on a colt. He does a lot, and he's not doing 50 and exclusively one rein stops for 10 days, but he nails it. You know, he makes sure it's connecting to the hind leg each and every time. I think the 50 for this gal, or for you know, someone that's not having the rein connect to the hind leg, is getting that connection through repetition, that enough times the horse goes, oh, I have to move the hindquarters. Oh, I have to. So they start feeling that rein and prepare. I mean, yeah, heck, without that, you, if you're not tapped into that underground well, you're kind of stuck. I mean, this whole, I don't know if I want to say it this way, but the whole system kind of falls apart, because that is so much the foundation of it.
Emma said, but it's only valuable if you're feeling for a turning loose laterally and feeling for the hind leg in your hand.
Now, on that, there were several things I noticed this time with Buck that I hadn't noticed. Well, I shouldn't say hadn't noticed, because I was talking to Mike, a friend of mine here, about some of the things I saw in Buck's rides and in how he worked these horses. And as I'm saying it, it's like, yeah, okay, it's the same thing. Like, nothing new. We've seen it 1,000 times. We've said the words, and yet here I am saying them again. But what I noticed, and this is kind of interesting, maybe something we talk about in an ongoing manner, is how much without it being false flexing, because it could easily become that, when Buck takes a hold of a rein or the lead and goes to bend a horse, he gets full flexion 90 degrees almost before it goes to the hind leg. Like, there's no resistance. It's not like a few degrees of flexion, then the horse's hind leg goes, and then more flexion happens. There is a rippling through the horse that puts a deep bend in that moves the hindquarters. And I'm not even saying it right. I don't know how to express what I saw necessarily in words. I guess it's not the horse bends to, I don't know, say 30 degrees and the hindquarters go, and that's where we are. And then eventually we get around to 90. Right. Yeah.
He gets the full bend right away.
It's not where we're getting to the hindquarters, but only at a 30 degree bend, and then we have to wait for the rest of it. And Emma said it's important to feel for the ribs to swing away. She said ripple is the perfect word. Yes, that's really everything I saw. Ripple is kind of the word that stood out to me, both the longitudinal flexion, a lot of it, the lateral flexion. Just again, there's no real new words in the way I'm going to say it, but just the seamless flowing, turn loose, the ripple to where the horse is just, there's zero resistance. It almost looks like the horse is floating through space as he changes from one bend to the other, as he flows from side to side. but that hindquarter yield and the flexion coming through to 90 as the hindquarters goes. And I know Emma was like, and I don't really like the way to say it either. It's like the 90 degree bend and then the hindquarters. It is all one. So it's not like they're bent to 90 degrees and then the hindquarters move. It is all one thing, but the ripple is complete up front where there is a deep bend rather than, and I asked him this kind of with that, with Maddie's mare, thinking of other horses that I have been riding. If you bend to say 30 degrees and the hindquarters is not yet going and you feel a brace there, do you wait for it to come through in the hindquarters before, or do you wait for that flexion to get a little deeper before you ask the hindquarters, or do you add the leg to get the hindquarters to come through even in that brace at say whatever 20-30 degrees? Are you gonna add leg? And you said yes, but only if it's not going to send them forward more and cause them to go into your hand, basically, to go into the rein. So there, I mean, it's very much a feel thing as to how and when you're using your leg. I don't know. It's just what I've been thinking about as from watching Buck ride. Lisa said, yes, Michael, perfectly said about Buck and the lateral bend. Emma said, it's not deeper. It's the feeling for the current to continue right, continue height the body. I don't know. Emma's got a typo there. She didn't go to Harvard. So, yeah, I don't like the way I'm expressing it in words at this point, and it is not sufficient or satisfactory, even though I went to Harvard. It's the first time I've said it. You're always the one saying it. But yeah, it's just never 30 degrees and then the hindquarters go and then we go from there. I mean, there's more flexion from there. Emma said, it's not deeper, it's the feeling for the current. Oh, I just read that, to continue through the body. And feeling for the thought to initiate the current through the whole body. Yeah. The thought, I think another thing that stood out to me, and we've talked about this before, related, let me get back to the thought, taking it through the whole body. When Buck would firm up, or when he firms up on his horses that are more advanced, maybe a little hurry with the hindquarters because they're not quite on time, or they're surging just a little bit, and he kind of sits them down and backs them up. It is just amazing to see, because some of those stops and backup, I mean, it can be pretty strong at times and require quite a bit from the horse. How they can do that. He can ask that, and there is zero change of expression. Zero. Like, the horse is not at all offended by it. The horse is not scared by it. The horse is not, comes out of it as if it never happened. And it was just another communication. Oh, yep. I need to speed up a little bit more there. I wasn't quite coming off your leg like I could have, with not a iota of change in expression. It's just phenomenal. All right. We've talked about it before, but I saw, I mean, that just stood out to me yet again. but the thought, what did you say? The feeling for the thought to initiate the current. That was another thing watching Buck. Emma said, if it gets stuck. Yeah. So if they're bending to 90 degrees, or you're not sure when to use your leg, how to help that kind of begin to come through the whole body. What's interesting in the ripple effect, and the just flowing laterally side to side, and that even when Buck comes up, the expression just doesn't change. It's almost like there's not thinking happening, because it's just feeling and doing. The horse isn't having to think and process. I mean, certainly if it's something new, or you're working on something, improving something, there's a puzzle to figure out, and the horse is working at it, and you're presenting new information or kind of up-leveling something. But when the horse understands, and I mean, just thinking about Boozy flowing around, I mean, it looks like the horse doesn't even have to think, because it's so just one body. Like, say you're walking out to the barn or whatever, you're not thinking about turning left. You're not thinking about, you know, stepping over this ditch, or, you know, log or whatever that fell in the last storm. You're just doing it. And that's what kind of the impression that comes through when Buck is riding. And it is just, even when he's working on something new, there, so much of it is the horse is just feeling him and doing, because there is no brace or resistance there.
There's no, yeah. No disconnection. That's what Emma said.
Jean said, soul to soul is an energy thing. We are one, unity. I said, no disconnection, and then said, in the ripple. Yeah. So it's not that the horse isn't thinking, but there's no need for deep thought or misunderstanding or trying to search each other out. It's just, yeah, like you know each other so intimately and are so in sync that you're operating as one. Which, again, nothing really new in terms of the words, but seeing that, to where it almost looks, not in a soulless blank sort of way, but it looks like the horse is so neutral. There's just this kind of zen movement about it. What's that expression mean? Emma said, that's why my comments about the rider with the weird every disconnection in their body, that was a huge new thing for me to notice. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was someone we were observing that there wasn't this kind of flowing connection from the center down into the horse. It was almost like, yes, I'm getting there. The arms, the legs, everything was disconnected from the core to where it was like a scarecrow up there, where there was no real connection through the body. It was just arms and legs trying to manipulate. Is that what you're meaning, Emma? Am I kind of summarizing what we were sort of talking but having to whisper because we didn't want to interrupt class, and we were 10 to 15 feet away from one another, so communication was stressed. So
She said it was so interesting. We have to be connected in our body.
it can't just be, it's kind of back to the, it can't just be mechanical, but it can't be disconnected. I mean, I'll often tell people one of the most challenging things in horsemanship, in terms of our part of it, is learning to fluctuate our energy. And I don't know, maybe that's not the most challenging thing for a lot of people, but I see that a lot. Folks that are kind of very quiet in how they go through the world, learning to project that energy from their core and do that naturally and flowing from them, rather than it being this real abrupt, okay, now I'm being strong and this is really foreign to me. Learning to escalate the energy, or someone who goes through life just real intense and real whatever, going, whoa, tone it down, feel this movement, feel the horse. I think that is a real skill to be acquired, and it all stems from this dancing feeling that starts from inside of you and comes out through all of your movements and all of your expression. I mean, I'm thinking like, I did Tai Chi for a while, and just kind of everything emanating from your center and all of your movements having just a flow to them. And yet, again, something like Tai Chi or even dance being quite structured in how you do it, very controlled, but flowing controlled, not rigid controlled. In this, what we were observing in this, this person was, it looked like the arms and legs were doing this, but it wasn't emanating from inside and therefore wasn't really connecting to the horse. It was just happening to the horse.
Emma said it was like their personal energy was coming out in very weird places, like the middle of their arm or in their spine or coming out halfway in their thighs. It gave me a new place to
Yeah.
hunt for myself.
I'll be honest, I was not seeing that in the way, I'm not being honest. You were seeing something different than I was, but I know what you were saying and I saw it, but I don't think I was seeing it the way you're the way you were noticing it. Val said, oh, go ahead, Clara.
Val said, Emma, can you expand on it? And Emma said, I've never been able to see it before. So
Yeah, it's
interesting.
interesting. I mean, again, when you aren't typing, when you're talking, it'd be interesting to hear more of a description of what you were seeing, because I was seeing, like I said, appendages being separated, but I wasn't seeing the internal. Whatever. We'll have to talk about it more unless you're gonna keep typing because you're not a good mime. She's in response to Val, Emma said, me being more integrated personally. Yeah. Making sure it's all tied together and flowing. Yeah. Which is, it's another one of those things where it's kind of duh, but when you see either something, you know, maybe fresh or new, maybe you've never seen it before, or maybe you've seen it 1,000 times, but your eyes alight on something new, it just calls you to that next level. Or you see an example of something that you're going, whoa, that just doesn't look right. It causes you to come back and go, how does that look and feel in me? I think is some of it. Emma said, another piece for me to check on days when things aren't working as well for me. I felt that last night. I was writing pretty late last night on Rooster, and it was a very, very much a flowing, very feely ride. And as I'm riding, I'm going, God dang, how many rides have I put on in the last month that didn't feel like this? And they all could have, you know, and a lot of it was the disconnected, like legs and arms are moving things. It's not, I mean, how do we get from wherever we might be to us moving as one, or riding from our seat, our core, whatever, to where it gets that subtle, it rises up the leg to where you're not riding with your lower leg doing everything. If it doesn't start there and emanate out, it can't emanate out and get back to where it's smaller and smaller and more invisible, but a tied in close connection between you and the horse. So I was just bemoaning the fact that more of my rides have not been that feely in the last month.
Emma said, way to appreciate the moment.
The electrical signals. Yeah. So the kids wanted to sleep in the tent last night. I really did not think, I did not think ahead when I said, oh yeah, we can do that on Wednesday. First of all, it's school night. Second of all, it was supposed to be raining. Thankfully, the forecast changed. I'm like, I got to ride. I didn't get to my horse. I had a delivery of hay. So I put them to bed in the tent. Had to wait forever till they were both asleep because they were going to keep bugging each other. So it's like 10 o'clock before I even am able to crawl out of the tent confident that I won't wake them up. And then I had to run down to the barn. All my gear was outside, still sitting on the round corral. I had to carry my gear in, go get the horse. And so I was out at the barn till almost midnight trying to get a ride on my horse. But sometimes those are my best rides when I'm out there late and I, like everything else, all the other thoughts and things I have to do are kind of done and over with. There's nothing else I'm going to do at that point except for being in the moment with my horse. So, but I can't sustain doing that all the time. Otherwise, I kind of hit the wall. I'm too tired to function the next day. But, you guys are over. Did we go 2 hours or an hour and a half? Hour and a half. Flora, thank you. Remember to tell people about Spotify and joining us next week. Yeah. Flora, are you ready for the 6:30 Pacific Standard Time, 8:30 Central? Can we make that flow? I was going to comment, though, Flora, when you're in your intro, you didn't have the sing-songy ring that Emma does.
I know. It's a real skill. So, Emma, you need to help me out. I mean, it's a unique Emma thing. I don't want to take it from her.
you would have sounded fake if you tried too hard to get it just right. You just kind of make it your own was just fine.
Yeah.
I was getting a hard time for it. Yeah. So this is available on Spotify. I think Emma's usually trying to get them up by Saturday. It's available audio and now video as well. Thanks for joining us. It was fun, Flora, to talk to you about the cult starting and the clinic. I had a blast. I'm glad I made it out to that clinic. It was unfortunate that we didn't get to hang out a little more with Emma, but glad we got to talk about it today, and we'll probably talk more about it when Emma has a voice next week. We'll revisit some of the things and whatnot. Yeah. So, yes, thanks
all, good. All Thank for joining you. Us.
We will see you next
Thanks, everybody.
Week. Go ahead, Flora.
All right.
You have to say.
Oh, see you next Thursday at 6:30
a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on 8:30 Central. See you then.